This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Late session news helped propel the wheat market to the upside that pulled quarter beans back near unchanged on the day Friday to wrap up the week. Welcome into Market Talk. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to have you here with us as we take a look at the markets and issues impacting rural America. Again, late session news in the wheat market with comments from Russian President Vladimir Putin talking more about leaving the Ukrainian grain deal. That seemed to give the markets a bit of upside momentum on the day on Friday, late in the session, that helped pull corn and beans back to the upside. Joining us now to talk about the market trade, we're diving right in today. He's taking a few minutes to join us live from his combine in Illinois. Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net joining us. And Matt, I got to ask first off, how's that early harvest going there in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, we just started yesterday. Things look pretty good to start with. Moisture content's running in the mid-20s. Gotten into some corn that's a little drier here today, but I'm not totally sure that it's going to stay this way. I mean, it's out on the edge of the field. So overall, the yield has been awfully good. I think, as you know, we've had pretty darn good weather in this part of the world this summer, and so it's not a huge surprise, I guess, that it's looking the way that it is. But right now at the start, I'm pretty pleased with what I'm looking at.
Good deal. Well, that's glad to hear. Well, we won't keep you too long. I know you're busy, but want to talk about some of Friday's trade action. Kind of a wild, erratic day led by that wheat market. You know, we had some pressure early on, and then wheat rallied. I think a lot of it, we found maybe some technical support that we bounced off, but also I know fresh comments from Russian President Putin about possibly getting out of the Ukrainian grain deal. It feels like that kind of gave us the opportunity to run to the upside in wheat, and that pulled corn and beans back towards unchanged on the day. Is that kind of what you saw? Would that be how you assess Friday's action in grains?
Yeah, it'd be the same thing. I'd kind of say that, you know, essentially with corn, we're under pressure early on. I don't think it's hard to fathom this time of year that you'd be under some pressure. You're heading into harvest, starting to see a little bit of activity, you know, and obviously you're going to hear about you know, some yields here and there. And I don't think a lot of them have been real rosy to start with. So some people were expecting maybe some support, but you got to be honest that, you know, most of the early harvest stuff is probably going to be some of the corn that maybe didn't quite make it to, you know, they're getting mature, just premature death. And so overall, I've got to think it's not surprising to see corn lower on the day. Probably would have kept that trend intact, but then you come in here with some support from wheat, spilled over to both corn and beans, and you're able to pair those losses, you know, on corn. I mean, basically a mixed day with some minor losses for soybeans. So I think overall it was a win, especially going into the weekend.
Especially going into the weekend and going into next week with a lot of concern, I think, with traders about the macro markets, worried about what the Fed will do with inflation next week. I think everyone pretty much assumes a 75 basis point rate hike, but it's felt like here towards the end of the week, the markets have got a bit tired amid a lot of that recessionary, inflationary talk that is out there in the trade. And heading into next week, it seems like that might be a big focus on top of some of that harvest pressure you mentioned, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the macro issues have really been what's plagued us the most. I mean, ultimately, you know, this market is worried about not only a slowdown here in the U.S., but a recessionary type slowdown on a macro, on a worldwide level. You know, of course, you've got interest rates going up, energy costs maybe coming back down just a little bit, but then today, earlier, whenever I was watching closely, I mean, we had crude trading 85 again. So, you know, I think that people are concerned about what it's going to cost to do the things they want to do, and what it's going to cost to finance those things, you know, especially with interest rates continuing to creep up. And so I think we all know that the ag sector has got a particular close eye on what interest rates are doing. Yeah, they're not interest rates of the 80s, but, you know, Jesse, a lot of the guys these days are borrowing probably 5, 10, 20 times what people were borrowing, you know, just to put a crop out back in the 80s. So obviously the pressure from interest rates going from 3.5 or 4 to borrow money for the year to 6 or 8 could certainly be profound.
Well, Matt, thinking about this time of year as we get into harvest, I know a lot of folks like yourself, I mean, you're at the combine right now, going to be busy running around. But if they have to make any changes to their marketing plan or maybe want to work on some sales, you know, if they're riding around the combine and they see some market moves and they want to look at their plan just a little bit, give me some risk management thoughts. Has anything changed in your mind when it comes to risk management here after this week's trade with the WASD numbers we saw Monday, the inflation data Tuesday, Wednesday? Has anything changed on the risk management front for you?
Oh, you know, essentially the way that I see it is if you can get an early premium, if you can get maybe a drying deal, which is kind of what I'm working for and finding for right now, I think you've got to take advantage of it. You know, the long story short, I mean, you know, these price levels for a producer who is able to say that they've got an average to above average crop are going to be pretty tough to beat, first of all. But I think whenever you get on out past the very initial stages of harvest, it's probably going to be just like any other year. You're not going to see those early pushes. You're not going to see drying deals, for instance. And so, of course, 2 weeks from now in my part of the world, nobody will be needing a drying deal because this stuff is going to dry down very rapidly. But I want to take advantage of any of those things that I can, first of all. And second of all, when it comes to marketing the crop, we got to understand this is a fairly tight situation. And so if the yields would happen to get pared back a little more, as some in the trade kind of seem to think, you know, as some of the early harvest results might suggest, you've got to think there'll be some support. So, you know, yeah, I want to take advantage of some of your early premiums, but on the other side of things, I think this storage could pay some dividends in the long run. So the stuff that you can't store, I'd probably be moving it. But the stuff that you can, I'll tell you what, if it's not sold in advance, you know, I think that you may have the opportunity to see a pretty good value moving out. Now, last thing I'll say is this. If you've got an above-average crop, I struggle to sit here and think that it makes sense to gamble on too much of it. You know, like if someone's looking at a 220, 250 crop, whatever it might be, you know, it's anything over $6.50 these corn is a heck of a price. So, you know, I know some folks are talking about leaving some storage empty. And if that happens, I don't think you can fault them with the kind of profit margins you're looking at.
Fantastic. Well, Matt, enjoy the harvest and hopefully have good weather through the weekend there in your neck of the woods. And appreciate you taking a few minutes to join us on this Friday, sir. Have a fantastic weekend, all right?
Absolutely, bud. You have a great weekend as well.
And again, that is Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net joining us here today on Market Talk. Learn more about them at AgMarket.net. You can download their app in the App Store, Google Play Store as well. And you can also give them a call, 844-4-AG-MARKET. Coming up here on the show today as well, we're going to be talking some agronomy tips. Nick Frederick King with AgriGold going to join us next. We're also going to talk soil health with Greg Binford of Wilbur Ellis coming up here later in the show. We'll be back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now, AgriGold agronomist, State of Illinois, Nick Frederick King is with us. Nick, good to catch up with you, sir. How are you today?
Doing pretty good, Jesse. Nice to be here. How are you?
I am good. I appreciate the time. Let's jump right in and talk a little bit. Looking at soybeans, you know, we're trying to get to the finish line across the country in beans and looking at disease pressures this year. You know, we always keep hearing about SDS in soybeans and how much yield that can rob. But SDS is also, comparable to some other diseases that you can maybe mistake a different disease for SDS in your bean fields. So explain this to me a little bit. What are some of your thoughts behind this and what growers need to be watching out for, Nick?
Yeah, so, you know, in corn this year, we've had very low disease pressure. But in soybeans, in the last month, we've started to see those foliar symptoms pop up in the canopy that would normally resemble sudden death syndrome in soybeans, or SDS for short. Now, the problem is there's some imposter diseases, right? We've got sudden death syndrome, obviously, but then brown stem rot, stem canker, and now a new one, red crown rot. All four of these can show those same foliar symptoms of interveinal chlorosis, some necrosis, and the challenge is diagnosing which one we're dealing with, because there are different ways to manage those pathogens.
Okay, so talk to me about managing some of those pathogens. Say I go out into my field and I don't find SDS, but I find one of those other diseases you mentioned. What are some late season management tips that I could maybe consider, or is this something where I have to think about next year's crop, Nick?
Great question. You're not doing anything about it this year if you see the foliar symptoms. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that's just the way these diseases work. So all four that I've just described, SDS, brown stem rot, stem canker, and then red crown rot, are all infecting early in that season and all starting either a root decay or some kind of stem and plant decay early on. Those foliar symptoms that we're seeing are just a byproduct of that early infection. There's those toxins that get metabolized up through the canopy, through those leaves, and that's where those symptoms are expressed. So foliar fungicides, not going to control these toxins, not going to control these diseases, because the problem started shortly after planting and the damage has just continued to happen all season long. Now, we may make pods on these plants that have been affected. The plants may look fine majority of the year. But, you know, in the last month or so, we've started to see a lot of premature death in these soybeans. So I'm seeing some plants that have, you know, let's say they put on 40 pods. Those plants today have no seeds to give because they just died too soon. They couldn't fill out those beans. And, you know, in some areas, we may see 25 or 30% yield loss, possibly more, in severely infected fields. There's just no way to handle that late season. It has to happen early season with either seed treatments, variety selection in our soybeans, or just, cultural practices as far as tillage of residue, crop rotation, and going to non-host crops.
Well, yeah, I think piggybacking off of that, obviously not being able to do anything here late season, but looking towards next year, I think with harvest, one, maybe prioritizing which field you're going to go into first, because if you have a field that has been hit with this disease, probably just going to let it go, leave it till last. But then also making that plan this winter into next year as we start to see what spring planting conditions are like and having that plan in place before you hit the field, right, Nick?
100%. Absolutely. Yep. So, you know, I want to make sure we highlight, though, as we go and assess these fields, whether it's at harvest or prior to harvest, making sure we understand which disease we're looking at. So if I could briefly go through how I diagnose in the field, the differentiation between these diseases, I'd love to do that, if that's okay with you, Jesse.
Yeah, please do. Please do. I'd love to learn more.
Yeah, so I walk out to these fields often and guys say, man, I had SDS this year. I'm like, hold the phone. Let's make sure it is SDS. So the first thing I'll do is find those plants that are expressing interveinal chlorosis, those foliar symptoms that we're accustomed to. I pull those out of the field, and now I have to go through a series of questions with those four diseases that we just talked about. The first one's going to be stem canker, because of the four, that's the only one we're going to notice exterior symptoms on the outside of the plant. So in stem canker, we're going to notice little lesions climbing from the bottom of the stem up the plant at every node level. That would be stem canker. I evaluate the plants. I don't see that. Now I can move to the interior of that plant. So I'll often split that stem of that soybean plant and start examining those inner tissues. It would be the pith tissue. I think everybody's probably split a corn plant before. They've seen that inside stalk. No different. That white pithy tissue should be inside of that soybean plant. If it is not white and we got some decay moving up from the crown up to that plant, we may have brown stem rot. Brown stem rot's going to have that dark decayed pith tissue as we look inside of that stem. Let's say it's not brown or decayed. It's still white. Well, now I can rule out stem canker and I can rule out brown stem rot. Push those to the side. Now we're dealing with SDS and red crown rot that would show those symptoms. SDS is going to keep a white interior of that pith. It's going to continue to look fairly healthy, but there will be some obvious root decay and crown decay in that plant. We can sometimes notice some bluish green fungus growing around that tap root where that fungus actually infected and decayed that root system. That would be SDS. The differentiator for red crown rot, which is a relatively new pathogen to the area, would be a distinct red tinge right at the soil line of where that soybean plant is coming out of the ground. And then the distinguishing factor would be these tiny red spores that separate red crown rot from any of the other three diseases that we're talking about. And that's really important because we have some active ingredients today that can combat SDS, right? There's really only two on the market today. It'd be Saltro and Olivo. Those would be the two that combat that. But aside from that, brown stem rot, stem canker, and red crown rot, to my knowledge today, we don't have active ingredients that would combat those specific pathogens. That would be more variety selection and cultivar selection for genetic resistance. My thought today, and I think it's shared a little bit throughout the industry, is that sudden death syndrome may be our leading factor in infection in these plants. And some of these others piggyback their way into the plant once that initial decay has happened right there at the root and crown. So those are my thoughts when we talk about differentiating diseases, but that's why it's so important to assess which one is actually affecting our soybeans in the field.
Well, fantastic analysis. And I think that's great for growers to definitely keep that in mind as they're looking at fields here this fall and their soybeans. Nick, any other thoughts you want to share with us just as we're preparing for, you know, this fall and getting into next year and thinking about all these different diseases we got to watch out for in soybeans? Anything else you want to mention today?
Well, record keeping is the name of the game. We certainly want to identify which fields have a history of these diseases. So in more severe cases, we can manage accordingly, right? If we're seeing fields that have high incidence of SDS or stem canker or brown stem rot, even red crown rot, well, they all like infection early in those cooler, very wet soils because they're fungal pathogens. Should we have a field history of this? We need to know that variety selection is important. And maybe we need to push that planting date back a little bit into that, you know, warmer soil conditions where we're not such a threat of getting this infection. And that's kind of contrary to what the industry says today, right? Because yield and soybeans is like a given if we plant early. But if we lose 25 to 30% of this yield because we've got that infection from early planting, did we gain anything? I would argue that.
Very, very true. Well, and I know as well, if growers need some advice, they need some help, they could reach out to their local agri-gold agronomist such as yourself. And I'm sure they could start, if they don't know who that is, go online, agri-gold.com, or contact their local retailer, can't they?
Absolutely. You got agri-gold.com to find your local agronomist. There's always a local DSM team very close by. So, yep, that's great advice.
Fantastic. Well, Nick Frederking with AgriGold, appreciate a few minutes of your time. I should ask real quick before I let you go, I know you cover a lot of Southern Illinois. How's crops looking as we near harvest there overall?
Yeah, overall, you know, there's a lot of variability out there. Southern Illinois is not a one-trick pony. There are a lot of environments here. So I do cover the bottom half of the state. I get up into that dark soil. I've got the sands on both rivers, and I've got that marginal silt loam that can challenge some guys in the center. So we're going to see guys with above average yields. We're going to see guys that are significantly below average. And then we'll have, you know, a lot of stuff that's just kind of on par in that 180 to 220 bushel range. But overall, I love the environment we've got right now. Some cooler temperatures at night, really allowing that pericarp of the corn to stretch and pack some dry matter inside. Soybean stress is alleviated a little bit with some recent rains and these cooler temperatures. So I like the way we're finishing, much more favorable than we looked early on in the season.
Fantastic. Well, again, we appreciate the time with that. Nick Frederking with AgriGold, thanks for joining us today, and we'll hopefully get a chance to talk to you again real soon.
I really appreciate the time, Jesse.
Up next, we talk soil health with Greg Binford of Wilbur Ellis. Back with more Market Talk right after this.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least. But there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. Now, back to Market Talk with Jesse Allen.
And joining us now, we are talking with Greg Binford. He's the National Director of Advanced Agronomic Training with Wilbur Ellis. Greg, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us today. How are you, sir?
Jesse, I'm doing great. Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate the invite.
Well, I thank you as well for joining us, because we're going to talk about soil health. And, you know, we've been hearing a lot about soil health, and it's been a real hot topic, I think. It has been for a long time, but especially the last few years. So just for starters, in your eyes, what makes soil healthy? Let's start there, Greg.
Well, Jesse, soil health, it's not something that you can just pinpoint one particular thing and say that, yes, because of this, my soil is healthy. I mean, it's a consortium of many things that influence soil health. We typically break it down into three categories that you need to focus on. And those are the chemical properties of your soil, the physical properties of your soil, and the biological properties of your soil. And so you can have outstanding chemical properties. You can have all your soil tests in ideal optimum ranges where you want them to be. But if you don't have the physical component, if you've ruined your soil structure through compaction, too much tillage, whatever it might be, you're not going to have the healthiest soil. And so we have to think about all three of those combined. And so if I were to pick a one word that makes the soil healthy, I'd probably focus on resilience. And the ability of that soil to produce relative to other soils under stressful conditions. So you have drought conditions. If that more healthy soil is going to produce better under those types of conditions, it might be the other way around. You might have too much water. A healthier soil is one that's going to produce better. And so just resiliency. And we hear a lot about soil resilience, and certainly something that we've started focusing on in this arena of discussions and working on soil health.
Very true. Well, you know, we're heading into the heart of fall harvest here, Greg. So let's talk about building that soil health plan. You mentioned a couple things around compaction, tillage, et cetera. You know, I know that looking at good soil fertility, what are some steps we could take here? We get the combines rolling, we get the crop harvested, and we start to look here at later this fall and into the winter. What are some steps that we could take to kind of get our soil ready for next year's crop?
One of the most important things I would say, as we take that crop off, that's an ideal time to look at the chemical component of our soil and to take soil samples. You know, my career, I've been working in soil fertility for 30 years now, and most farmers use soil testing as a way to decide, to make decisions about nutrients, whether they need nutrients or not, whether they need to apply lime. It still surprises me. I come across people once in a while who don't use soil tests. They just kind of use what they've always done. And I've seen that come up and bite people in the past, where they've always done what they've always done and not realizing that something was getting out of whack and that their yield levels are depressed simply because their pH is not right. They've got a certain nutrient that might be deficient. So, Jesse, I'd say the most important thing, one of the most important things from a soil health, is to check that chemical component and take that soil sample and get a feel for what your soil looks like from a chemistry standpoint. And is there anything that needs to be added or changed?
Well, Greg, what about cover crops. Let's talk about those. What role do cover crops play in improving our soil health?
If we look at cover crops, they're certainly increasing in popularity. There's multiple reasons for that. From a soil health standpoint, we know that if we can keep roots in that soil year-round, we are going to improve the biological activity. We have roots in there that are exuding carbon into the soil, into the rhizosphere, that improves biological activity. The more biological activity we have in that soil, better the soil structure will be. Another thing that's important about cover crops is capturing nutrients. If we've got more nutrients out there, and particularly this year, if you look at what's happened across the Midwest this year, there are lots of pockets where people have not gotten the rainfall that they had planned for. And so yields are going to be depressed. And if you applied nutrients for, you know, a 220 bushel corn crop and you only get 150, or, you know, I talked to some people yesterday that they're hoping for 125 bushel. In a normal year, they'd have 225, 250 bushels. They put that nitrogen out there. So using a cover crop can be a benefit because we can capture those nutrients and keep them in the soil. Because if you've got nitrogen in the soil, in most of the Midwest where we get the winter rainfalls and spring rain, or winter moisture and spring rainfalls, very unlikely that nitrogen is still going to be around next year. But if we can capture it in a cover crop, then it could still be there and something that we could benefit from next year.
Greg, any specific cover crops you point to that are maybe better than another, especially in some of those areas in the heart of the Corn Belt where we can get those heavy snows and then get some of those early spring rainfalls?
You know, if you're just starting off with cover crops, I think the place to start is with some type of a small grain. Cereal rye is probably one of the most popular. I've seen people use oats, but if you can use something that you can get some biomass growing in the fall, get some roots down into that soil where you can soak up those nutrients. I think starting off with a small grain, again, cereal rye would probably be the one that I would recommend, just from a standpoint of it's relatively easy to get going as a cover crop. And what you see is that as people get into cover crops, they like that process, then what I often see happen is people start to mix in some other types of cover crops and put in maybe some radishes or some turnips. I've seen people use peas, mix some type of a legume. I mean, that can be a benefit because that's going to add nitrogen to the soil that wouldn't be there normally, and you utilize that in the next season.
Greg, talk to me about tillage a little bit more. We hear a lot about different tillage practices, strip till, no till, reduced tillage. Talk to me about tillage practices and how those impact soil health.
So tillage has a big impact on soil health, and mostly from the physical component, I would say, because every time we till that soil, you're going to destroy soil aggregation. And that's one of the benefits of soil health is more soil aggregation, where the soil particles bind together to form soil structure that gives you good porosity within the soil, that helps with water infiltration, helps reduce runoff, helps hold. Basically, you're going to store more water just because you get more of it into the soil. Also a better environment for those roots to grow between those soil aggregates. So, but every time we till, we break up the soil aggregates. And the other thing that's very important about soil health is organic matter. We've known this for decades. I mean, if you look at soils, the mollusk soils that we have in Illinois, Iowa, and lots of places across the Midwest, one of the reasons why they're so productive is because they have lots of organic matter because of the way they developed with native prairie grasses under those soils. And so whenever you till a soil, you cause organic matter to burn off. If you've added residue to that soil, it's going to break down faster because you mix up that soil. Oxygen comes into the soil, you get more oxygen and you get more microbial activity, and that activity burns off carbon. So the more tillage we do, the more organic matter we lose. And also, you know, if you look from a soil health standpoint, we try to build more organic matter. But if we're tilling the soil, it makes it really difficult to build organic matter because basically you're creating a great environment for it to just be burned off as carbon dioxide and not stored in the soil.
Well, Greg, great insight here today. Any other final thoughts, any other tips you want to share with us surrounding soil fertility and soil health here as we head into the fall?
You know, as I mentioned earlier, soil testing, we're getting into that time of the year when soil testing is, you know, people often ask, when's the best time to take a soil sample? My opinion, the best time is the fall. And that's because it gives you more opportunity to get those results back and make some decisions. But the most important thing in my mind is that you take soil samples at the same time every year, because there are fluctuations during the year. pHs can change, potassium levels can change. And so it's important to take them at the same time, because one of the things I see people not do is they don't pay attention to past history on their soil test. They take a soil test, they look at this year's results, and they make their decisions. But in my mind, the most powerful way of using soil testing is to look at long-term trends. Are my nutrient levels increasing? Are they decreasing? Are they staying the same? And you could want all of those depending on your situation. If you've got really high nutrients, you might want them to drop a little bit. If you're in that low category, low part of the optimum range, then you definitely don't want to have your nutrient levels dropping over time. And as we take off more yield every year, yield levels increase. Varieties, hybrids become better. We take off more yield. We take off more nutrients. And also last year, fertilizer prices got super high. People cut back on their nutrients in a lot of cases. Look at those soil tests and make sure that we're not depleting the nutrients. What I would recommend is reach out to your local Wilbur Ellis representative, because they can help you with getting soil tests and they can help you with the interpretation and the development of the plan for what you're going to do in 2023.
Well, we appreciate the time, Greg. Thanks for the awesome insight here with us today. Greg Binford, National Director of Advanced Agronomic Training with Wilbur Ellis. Appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day, sir. Thank you.
Jesse, thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
And we'll continue with more Market Talk coming up right after this.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. Been a busy show here today. Greg Binford of Wilbur Ellis joining us in the last segment. Before that, Nick Frederiking with AgriGold joining us to talk about some agronomic issues. Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net at the top of the show, joining us live from his combine. So really glad we could get connected with Matt too, and everyone we've had on the show today as well. Want to get a little more market perspective in here too. I talked with Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist at StoneX, around midday on Friday and got his thoughts on the market trade. And Arlen had some interesting comments I wanted to make sure we shared on the show here today, just about the broader trade feel as we head into the weekend and the economic side heading into the Federal Reserve meeting next week. Here's that commentary with Arlen Suderman. First off, top of mind, and not only is there some harvest pressure out there, but also a lot of the economic fears seem to be weighing on the broader markets here today. Is that kind of what you're sensing in the market trade?
Yeah, that really has been a factor here as we've watched these grains and trade. In fact, many of the commodities and the equities have been under pressure as we close out the week on recession fears. And that's just a broad stroke painting by the fund saying, okay, if we're going into a deeper recession, that means consumers want fewer commodities. And that may be true for some commodities more than others, but people still do eat. It may change how they eat. They may go down the value chain and stuff. So that may be a little bit more negative for cattle than for hogs, for example, or for poultry. But overall, that's been the sense. We have seen some firming of values as we go late into the morning. And part of that's been because of reports coming out of the meeting between Russian President Putin and the head of Turkey, Erdogan. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but as they're talking about the need to change the Safe Corridor Passage Agreement that allows grain to flow out of Ukraine. And there's fears in Ukraine that President Putin's going to try to stop that from being renewed when we get to November. And I've been wondering how long it would be before Putin would try to stop that. So that's firming up wheat and corn values. Both of those are big commodities that are exported out of Ukraine. There's not a lot to go on, so we may see a lot of choppy trade continue, but that's providing kind of a hesitancy by the trade to go into the weekend short.
I was going to say, I know we saw a bit of a bearish reversal on the wheat charts Thursday, and but you mentioned that those talks between Russia and Turkey's presidents there, and it feels like wheat's kind of been our leader, at least on Friday, to the downside, and then coming off our lows as we go mid-session here, Arlen.
Yeah, that's where a lot of the volatility is overall in this market. And it's been most sensitive to, I think, what's happening in Ukraine. Ironically, the majority of grain that's been on the ships leaving Ukraine through the safe passage from those three ports has been corn and not wheat. But it's still the wheat market that's been most sensitive to the headlines that the funds are trading.
Arlen, and soybeans, I know we got some NOPA numbers this morning. I'm wondering, are those maybe weighing in that soy market a little bit here today?
I think it's a big picture thing. I think it's more about China trying to avoid doing business with the United States. They're still going to have to buy soybeans from the United States, but maybe not quite as much. They've bought anywhere from 100 to 130 million bushels of soybeans from Argentina for shipment in September and October. That directly reduces the amount of soybeans they need to get from the United States. And overall, their demand has been soft as well, although it is improving. But tensions between the United States continue to increase and are probably at multi-decade highs right now, particularly with a bill going through a Senate committee this week that would kind of alter our relationship with Taiwan in a way that is antagonistic to China, that further threatens our future trade with China.
I know going into next week as well, the broader economy waiting for the Federal Reserve, we assume that there's going to be a 75 basis point rate hike. And I know that that is something traders are watching very closely. Economically, macro markets, anything that you're really keeping an eye on here headed to the weekend?
I think that meeting by the Federal Reserve next week is going to be critical. As you indicated, the trade is putting right now about 86% odds on a 75 basis point rate hike, and then a similar rate hike in their November meeting. The question is, are they going to change their monetary tightening, or their tightening of their balance sheets? What other policies might they alter or change? The Fed has been very hawkish in its comments in recent weeks about getting control over inflation and that being their number one priority. And it's probably necessary, but they have to dose out the medicine to cure inflation at the right pace. If they get too aggressive, they can send us into a much deeper recession than necessary. If they're not aggressive enough, inflation can take a much greater hold on the economy and do more long-term damage. And the markets are just really nervous whether they're going to have the right recipe or not.
And again, that is Comments with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX. I talked with him around midday on Friday, got his thoughts on the market trade headed to the weekend. One other news note I wanted to share before we run out of time. Pork producers and other farmers nationally will be faced with meeting multiple conflicting state welfare standards if the U.S. Supreme Court lets California's Proposition 12 stand. Now, National Pork Producers Council leaders said this on Thursday as they talked to reporters about the case and the risks for farmers nationwide if the Supreme Court doesn't overturn California's law. Michael Formica, chief legal counsel for NPPC, said, quote, California is free to regulate hog farms that are located in California. So to the extent they want Proposition 12 to apply to those hog farms, that's well within their authority to do so. Our concern is when they reach out to Iowa, Minnesota, or Missouri and try to tell those farmers what they are able to do, end quote. Now, the high court has agreed to hear an appeal from NPPC and AFBF, American Farm Bureau Federation, after the Ninth Circuit upheld the law. The farm groups argued that California's law, which remains under an injunction, violates the U.S. Constitution's Interstate Commerce Clause, and they will have that hearing on October 11th. So that's a situation we're going to continue to watch very closely. That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks for listening to Market Talk. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, wishing you a great rest of your day.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.